This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
What is up, everybody? I know you may have been expecting Archer Season 2 this week, and this isn't Archer Season 2. This isn't Archer Season 2 at all.
It's not?
Oh. Did I...
Why do I have all these notes?
Were you CC'd on that email? We're going to do South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut this
why
week.
Why am I not the first person to get these emails? Who is getting these mysterious emails?
Shoot. Oh, I sent it to... Teen-tastic Tyler. I have no idea who that is.
That guy gets all my mail.
Damn it. Well, we're going to talk about South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut this week instead of Archer Season 2, and it's not all your right. fault. You didn't do anything wrong, audience. It's my fault. I've been working a new job. I don't have time to watch a full season of television every week right now, so don't blame yourselves. It's my fault. But we're going to talk about South Park.
Don't blame me either.
Yeah, please. Don't blame Tariq this time. There are plenty of things that are Tariq's
There are many other things you can definitely blame me for that I will gladly take the blame for.
So for the next 2 or 3 weeks, maybe, we're going to do movies instead of seasons of Archer just because they're easier for us to watch every week. They all still curse, promise
yeah,
you
they
that.
Do.
In fact, this week might be the cursiest cartoon ever. In fact,
we're
for a long time it held the record. Kirsten. It literally held the record for most swears in a movie for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's about South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, and we have the craziest guest you could ever imagine. Can you believe we got this?
It's literally the best possible guest you could get for this film.
It's wild. Ladies and gentlemen, joining Cartoons That Curse, we have Brian Boitano.
Did someone say my name?
What the hell?
I'm Brian Dennehy.
Fam.
We didn't say fucking Brian Dennehy.
Who the hell is this?
Did we book Brian Dennehy? Get the fuck out of here, Brian Dennehy.
Oh, bye.
So we don't even have Brian Boitano. This is how we're starting it?
Yeah. After 2 weeks of radio silence, this is how we, yeah, okay.
God damn it. Cue the theme song. Just cue it.
I've been watching them for years. It's always been something that fit with all the animated characters that's doing their own bits. With a fry who's in the future and a family guy that sucks. With a father from a hill, a burger family runs amok. The show and spies is the same guy, except he totally say f***. End of verse.
Let's watch Cartoons That Curse.
What the f*** is up, everybody? Welcome to Cartoons That Curse. My name is Johnny. I'm here with my co-host, Tariq. How you doing, Tariq?
I am doing well. How are you doing, Johnny?
I'm doing well as well, Tariq.
We should be, yes. We are well together. Together we're well.
We're well together. That's going to be the sub-name of our podcast. Cartoons That Curse. Johnny and Tariq, together. Well together.
Cartoons That Curse well together.
Well together. Yeah. Guys, welcome to the podcast. I know it's been a couple weeks since we released an episode, and this isn't the episode that you expected it to be. It's been a couple weeks since I've gotten to see my friend Tariq on camera and talk to him like this, too. So,
yeah,
this is
it feels weird that this isn't part of the routine anymore.
It's been a weird couple weeks. We were doing this so regularly before I got this new job. Tariq was out of town.
Yeah.
It was a lot. But here we are. We're back. We're going to talk about an incredibly funny movie, South Park really Bigger, funny. Longer, and Uncut. Tariq and I actually watched this together a few weeks ago, and we had a grand old time. It was really fun.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it was just crazy watching and just reliving how this movie is borderline perfect, like, as an adult.
It's so funny, and it's such a genius premise. And the crazy thing is this came out like in the middle of season two or three of South Park. This was such early. This was so early. So they were working on this movie during the production of season two of South Park. So like South Park apparently just became this huge sensation right off the bat in like 97. Mm-hmm. And instantly they're like, we need to do a movie, which is crazy because The Simpsons took, you know, what, 18 years to make a movie. Mm-hmm. And South Park was like, we're going to do it in one, and it's going to be one of the best things we ever make related to South Park.
Yeah. It's really good. You ever hear like the audio commentary for this? I heard it as a kid, but I still remember.
No, I actually haven't. I have the Blu-ray though. I should do that. I should have listened to that to prepare for the podcast, but sorry folks, didn't do
First and foremost, from what I remember, Matt and Trey have a really weird way of doing audio commentaries, and this one is no different, because from what I remember, like, they didn't want to talk the whole movie, so they would like talk a little bit and then pause and then leave, and then they'll come back with, like, I don't know, an executive or somebody that did some of the music, and then just sit down with them and talk for a little
interesting.
Bit. Be like, all right, we're done. So
they
with
bring
this
people in for different points. Mm-hmm. I've listened to some South Park commentary on episodes of the show before, and those are also a little weird because sometimes they just will talk for like 4 minutes of the episode. Mm-hmm. And they're like, that's all we have to say, so we're done with the commentary. Enjoy the rest of the episode, which was not what I expected. But it feels very Matt and Trey. Like, they're just like, well, here's all we have to say. We're not going to stretch this out any longer than we need to.
Right.
Yeah.
Nah,
you know, granted that the show's been on for 24 years now. So, but it's, you know, it's like an institution at this point. It's a crazy show. It's gone through a lot. It's gone through, you know, I mean, it's a show that's made to offend, that's been on since the 90s. So it's got quite a history. It's got a lot of stuff. If we ever talk about every season of South Park, it's going to be an interesting minefield to navigate. Let's just say that much.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think let's just talk about the genius of this movie, which is that they made a movie about a movie with a bunch of swear words about a movie with a bunch of swear words corrupting the youth. They just called their shot. They were like, this is how people will feel about this movie, so we're going to make the movie about that. That is galaxy brain. That's just so smart.
When I saw it as a kid, what I remember thinking that... So what you're saying is actually what I think is what they did. But I think my brain as a kid was telling me that they were sort of not retelling, but like... kind of saying, this is what happened when the show came out. Like, people looked at it like this, like it was going to cause all of this mayhem, when really it's just a show on television and everybody's kind of overreacting. That's how I saw it as a kid. But at the same time, it could literally just be both. And I think that...
I mean, it probably is both. Yeah, it basically is both. Because they did have, like... there was a visceral reaction to South Park. You know, you had a lot of people saying it was corrupting the youth. And, you know, it's funny... It's actually kind of funny if you look at like the arc of how people view South Park, and how back in those days it was like it was one side of the political spectrum saying this show is corrupting everyone, and now it feels like it's the other side of the political spectrum that's saying this show is corrupting everyone. It's just, it's kind of funny. It's actually impressive. It's actually kind of impressive. How did you first watch this movie? How old were you? Where did you see it? What was that experience like?
Jeez. Okay. So I was around 11 to 12 the first time I saw this. I wouldn't catch it on like Comedy Central or nothing like that. So I actually saw it like on like this really weird website that I'm pretty sure isn't around anymore. But I watched it in the middle of like my fascination with South Park. I think I told you about this one night, but in sixth grade, all the kids in my school watched South Park. Like, that was the year to watch South Park. And that year just so happened to be the year, I think that's 13, the year with like The Ring. I think Fish Sticks is in that run.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. So
yeah, let me look. That's got Dances with Smurfs, Pee, The Ring, The Coon, Butter's Bottom Pitch.
I love that one. I love that one.
Pinewood Derby, which is one of my favorite episodes. Mm-hmm. Pinewood Derby is so good. It's a wild season.
Yeah, but that was the year that for some reason every kid in that grade just kind of went, we're all gonna watch South Park, and we would come back on Thursday and everybody would be talking about what happened on South Park. So
right,
like in the midst of that fascination, that's when I like discovered that they had a film, and then I discovered it was a musical, like all of this stuff, and I'm like, well, I gotta try to find this somehow. And then
right,
I watched it like that, and I loved it from the moment I saw it. Like it blew my mind instantly. Like, I thought it was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. And I think it might be one of the main factors why I love musicals so much now. Cause it was still like formative years for me. And like seeing that and seeing how that was put together and how all of the songs not only were sounded really well, but they were written really well, and there were jokes in there, and it was, I don't know, like just seeing all of that, like I was like, this is a lot, like this is really, really dope.
That's the crazy thing, is it's not only just a funny South Park movie, but it's a really good musical. Like right, the music is so good. And also obviously they went on to write the Book of Mormon and win a billion Tonys, so like they're like, and they have so much music throughout the show, so like music is obviously a big thing for them. So my first experience watching this movie, I was probably around a similar age. I think I was probably 11 or 12. I know it was really hard for me to watch South Park at home because my mom had like the lockdown. She's like, you will not like you. She was barely okay with me watching The Simpsons, let alone watching South Park. Okay. But I would sneak it at night. I would watch it when I could. I remember I was at my dad's house. It was really late at night and I was watching Comedy Central, and all of a sudden the movie started. And I was like, huh, oh, the South Park movie. I guess it's on TV, so like, you know, it's going to be censored, but I've never seen this before. I better give it a watch. It turns out I was watching the very first airing ever of Comedy Central's Secret Stash. Jeez. If you're not familiar, Comedy Central's Secret Stash is that late at night, after midnight, they would air uncensored movies. They would air R-rated movies uncensored. They would put a warning before it. I didn't really process the warning when it came up. They even do a warning after every commercial.
That's nuts.
but the genius of this and the way that it made it even more shocking for me is that the movie's first swear word, if I'm not mistaken, is the first swear word in the Terrence and Phillip movie when the kids go to see it. So you go through the whole opening musical sequence, which is great. It's a really good song. And I was just like, oh, I'm really excited to watch the South Park movie. I've never seen this before. And literally, the kids' reaction to seeing, to them saying that you're like a cock face fuck master or whatever, like to Terrence and Phillip saying, like, just saying fuck, was exactly my reaction, because I was watching television and I was like, they're not allowed to say that. Like, it blew my mind. Like, the moment that they said that, I was like, this isn't allowed. What's happening? Like it exploded my brain, and all of a sudden I got like giddy. I was like, am I about to get to see this actual movie? And then the whole movie, and I watched the whole movie, you know, it was like 1-2 a.m. by the time it ends. And it was like, I felt like I was like living on a cloud. I was like, it was, I can't describe the like glee I felt. Being like, A, it felt like I was doing something I wasn't supposed to. B, it was like, oh, I never thought I would get to see this, like, at least, you know, at this age. And also just the shock of, like, it being on TV. I was like, this is so cool. And so that was my first experience with the South Park movie. And I don't know if I will, like, ever match that. It was the perfect way to experience the movie for the first time. It was so great. Yeah. And I've always loved this movie. I think it's so funny. Obviously, like, the show is meant to offend. There's plenty of stuff in it that's like, oof. But
right.
that's South Park. And it just really, it just keeps the laughs coming. The premise is so funny. And the songs are so good. The dang songs are so good.
Yeah, like, they aren't, because I don't know, even sometime, I guess, like cartoons, cartoon animated films or whatever, they'll do like, oh, we're going to do a musical number, but it's like a parody musical number. So like, we're not going to try really super hard on the music. We're just kind of going to make it really tongue in cheek. Like, there's none of that in this movie. Like, this is, you could adapt this to the stage. Like, there's like, it's that brilliant.
I would kind of love if they did that. I would love that. Seeing a stage performance of South Park, I would go see that for sure.
I would too. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That would be so fun. You know, this is also early South Park, so it feels a lot different. You know, it's like, it feels super different than a lot of the stuff that comes later. You know, like Randy was barely even a character. He's barely in this movie. He like, the only times he talks, he's like part of a, he's like part of a crowd of dads. You know, he's just one of the dads.
Right.
It's mostly focused on the boys and Sheila.
I remember somewhere in the commentary, they talked about how like they couldn't believe that they made a movie, an entire movie, without using Butters. Like, that's just it's unheard of them like now to do something like that. But back then, it was just Butters is in like a couple shots, but
Butters is my favorite South Park character, and even I don't even like didn't even register like, oh yeah, I guess Butters isn't really in this,
right?
You know, they even have like, well, this is like barely makes sense within the context of the movie, but they even have Damien in a shot who's in one episode of season one, who's Satan's son. Mm-hmm. He's like, he goes to see the movie with them and he walks out. Like, you see, you see him in the background, which obviously doesn't make sense because Satan is a major part of this movie. So like that, they have no, seemingly no connection outside of that one episode. That's the other thing that I love about this movie, though, is like that Satan is kind of one of the main characters who has like a very substantial character arc.
Right.
They give him the I Want song. Like, his song up there is the like, I'm dreaming of this and this is what I want with my life song that you would find in your typical musical. And they give it to the Lord of the Underworld.
Right.
Satan. And they put him in like an abusive relationship. They make you empathize with him because Saddam Hussein is an abusive lover to Satan, which is just, I don't know how your brain thinks of that, but Matt and Trey did it and they nailed it.
it's so funny. Like, I don't, and it's crazy because, and I feel like you probably feel the same way, but like seeing this movie as a kid, you just kind of accept certain things. So like that, the realization that this is like Satan and Saddam Hussein doesn't really register until I'm talking about it out loud as an adult, because it's just so like normal for me now that I've seen this movie so many times.
I would be willing to bet that there are so many people who, to them, Saddam Hussein is just a South Park character. They don't understand the cultural context of who he was.
I believe it.
And it's like, I mean, at this point, he's been dead for like over a decade. So like he, you know, it makes sense. It makes sense that people would like not be like, wait, who is this? They kind of explain it in the movie. They like, they say who he was in a line, but like, I'm sure that a lot of people's introduction to Saddam Hussein was South Park. There's got to be so many people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, to be fair, like, I was introduced to so many political figures through The Simpsons, you know, like tons of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
There's, you know, there's tons of like politicians' names who I don't even really know who they were, but I just know from a Simpsons reference. I like embedded in my brain is Homer saying Lyndon LaRouche was right. And I've looked up who Lyndon LaRouche is, but I don't remember who Lyndon LaRouche is, and I know it's a politician. There's just so many things like that. I'm sure a lot of people were introduced to George H.W. Bush through that Simpsons episode.
That's a good intro, though.
it's a pretty good intro.
That episode rules.
It's a wild episode. It's kind of the beginning of Homer starting to be really belligerent. It feels like Homer is Homer starts to get a little belligerent at the beginning of that episode, and then obviously he just fights the president the rest of the episode.
Right.
So, you know, it's a pretty belligerent episode. He's not as much of an asshole as he becomes a little later, but
no,
he is belligerent. And, you know, I wouldn't call him not an asshole. But yeah, you know, like, I think a lot of, it's funny how cartoons can introduce you to aspects of culture like this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting. Like, they were making this, they're making this movie during season two. Season two is one of the only seasons of South Park that has a bunch of other writers credited on those scripts. Because I think they were really busy on this, even though Trey Parker is still credited as director for almost every episode. They had a bunch of other people in the writer's room who have credits on the scripts, which is just like, at this point, if you look through a list of writers for South Park, it just says directed by, written by Trey Parker, yeah. Trey Parker.
Down the line.
Which is wildly impressive.
They're also kind of scary.
Yeah, no doubt. And the film is written by Trey Parker, Matt Stone, and Pam Brady, who, you know, I guess I don't. I like looking at this list of stuff that Pam Brady's worked on. Oh, wow.
You like lit up. What's on there?
Well, she also helped write Team America World Police. She wrote on South Park. She wrote on Lady Dynamite, co-created Lady Dynamite, which I think is an underrated show. It was a show on Netflix starring Maria Bamford, co-created by her and Mitch Hurwitz, who created Arrested Development. Maria Bamford's a genius, underrated genius. She's incredible. But the thing that made me light up was that she wrote, it looks like she wrote, was the sole writer of Hot Rod, which is one of my favorite comedic films. I fucking adore Hot Rod. So, you know, I just became a Pam Brady stan at this moment right now. I wish I feel ashamed for not having known who Pam Brady was until this moment. You know, Pam Brady, thank you for your work. You've made a lot of things that make me very happy. this is great, great work. Big fan. What are your favorite things about this movie? This movie's wild. It goes a lot of places. Like, you have the swear situation. You have the war with Canada. It's a lot. You have the underworld coming up to take over the earth. Like, there's a lot happening in this movie, and somehow it doesn't feel like it when you're watching it.
I think when I had like my brief obsession with the film when I was a kid, one of the things I couldn't get over was that, like, even in that cardboard art style, it still looks like a film somehow.
Right.
It's still really cinematic. It's still really gigantic. And they did this really cool muted color thing with it. And, like, before films, you know, went totally digital, just like looking at a movie that was done on film, this is a totally different experience.
Right.
So sometimes, like, I catch myself just wanting to look at the movie, like, not even just watch the whole thing, but just kind of look at it a little bit, because I just really, really adore
I'm so curious how they animated it, because I think when South Park started, obviously the pilot was literal stop motion cardboard.
Right.
And then I think they started using Power Animator, I want to say. They used some software to animate.
Right.
And I think that's what they also used for this.
It has to be.
Yeah, but they, you know, it's, you can tell, like, they put more into the textures. They put more into, there's a lot more computer graphics in this than, yeah, like, you know, computer looking graphics in this than were in the show at the time. And obviously this was rendered out in high def in 16:9, whereas the show was in standard def. One of the craziest things about South Park, though, is apparently that production where they were just pack rats, of digital pack rats, basically. And they just kept all of their old Power Animator files. They eventually switched to Maya. They started animating on Maya, but they kept all of their old files. And so then when television switched to high def, they went back and re-exported every episode of South Park except the pilot in full widescreen high def. So you can watch all of South Park in high def. Yeah. If you watch it on HBO Max, it's all in high def, even though they started making that in the 90s, which is unheard of for an animated show. And unheard of for most shows, especially the the widescreen enhancement. Some old shows were shot in film and they can put in high def on Blu-ray, but they'll still be in 4x3.
Right.
Because usually they're blocking for 4x3. They're not, right. They're ignoring the things that are in this part, these parts of the screen. Yeah. So just interest, such an interesting and unique workflow for this show that allowed, you know, because it was so simple, it allowed them to move with technology more than anything else, which is kind of ironic.
I heard them. I remember from the audio commentary, again, I haven't heard it in years, but one thing I remember is them telling a story about how they kind of treated this movie like this show, and you're not supposed to do that. And I'm saying that in the means of like, they like finished the movie dangerously close to when it was supposed to come out. And they said the executives were like freaking out. And they were like, nah, we got it. They were chilling because they knew what they were doing. They're like, nah, we got it. We'll be fine. And then the executives were like freaking out because it's just not what's supposed to happen.
Oh my God. That's so funny. That sounds exactly like them. And they've literally just been able to continue with that workflow. In fact, they've perfected that workflow. Delivering a show the day of air every week that they do it, which is incredible.
And they had that, was like a blackout, right? During, wasn't that World War Zoom or something like that, that episode?
They did have a blackout week, but it wasn't because they couldn't finish the, it wasn't because they like failed to get the episode out on time. It was because there was, it was like a literal power outage. It was a literal power outage that prevented them from getting out. That was funny. When you said blackout, I was like, yeah, they had a blacked out week. not literal blackout. So then I took a long walk to get exactly where we started.
We got you there though. Right back around.
Oh, perfect. This is going great.
You're telling me.
Oh man. This movie also had, I think we said this before, most swears in movie history at this point. Nominated for an Oscar, for the for Blame Canada, which frankly I think only got the nomination because it was the least vulgar song. I think there are 5 better songs than Blame Canada, and I don't dislike Blame Canada. I think Blame Canada is good. I think they should have gone with Up There. Or Up There is just the best. It's such a good song. They lost to You'll Be in My Heart from Tarzan. And then they subsequently
I disagree.
Really, really hated on Phil Collins in South Park after that. which was very funny. I don't particularly like that song. I know a lot of people do, and I'm not gonna hate on those people. But I wish Blame Canada had won. Yeah, I really do.
I just disagree with the choice.
Yeah. And they if I'm not mistaken, Robin Williams performed it at the Oscars, which is which is crazy.
I was gonna bring that up. I remember that.
Yeah.
Not remember being there, but I remember seeing that online once.
And I believe I think it was these Oscars, if I'm not mistaken, Matt and Trey went to them in dresses on LSD. Yeah. Unless they went to a different, unless this was a different Oscars, but they never been nominated before other than this, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
I'm pretty sure this is when they wore dresses to the Oscars and they were on acid the whole time, which is something I am very impressed by. Pretty cool. That's pretty so cool rad. Thing to do, in my opinion. Pretty cool. There's some interviews you can watch of them on the red carpet, and you can tell that they're like buzzing out of their minds, but like they're just having a great time. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they can do it, but I'm impressed. Such a fun movie. Do you have a favorite song in this movie?
I really love Mountain Town, the first
one.
Me too.
It's such a good opening.
Yeah, the I love the opening and how it like goes to every character, and like you figure out pretty much what their arc in the movie is going to be just by the brief conversation they have.
Right.
But it's the reprise, the one at the end that I really, really, really like. Really big, gigantic one where everybody joins in. Man, I love that so much. And I think I remember all of those words. I learned them as a kid because I was really weird and would do stuff like that.
I was driving home from work today and I was thinking about how we were going to record this episode, and I subconsciously started singing that song. I was just in the car. I was like, there's a bunch of birds in the sky. And I didn't even catch it until I was like, oh, I just sang that whole song.
Some deer just went running by.
Yeah. It's such a sweet, nice start to the film. It's just, it's great.
Yeah. I love it.
They ease into it so well. And every time the movie starts and it goes from that Paramount logo into the South Park cutout mountain and the sun and the music starts, I don't know. I get a warm, fuzzy feeling. It's simultaneously, I really like the movie and it's just so nostalgic. It feels really nostalgic to me.
That's a really clever way to start the movie. When I said that, I think I know all the words. I definitely know all the words to that song, but the words I was talking about were all of those adjectives they give the town at the end of the last.
That's
one.
That's impressive. I knew that as a kid. Those are the ones I mix up. Those are the ones I mix up for sure.
I might mix them up now. It's been some years. But I think my absolute favorite song in the movie is La Resistance.
Oh, I love La Resistance.
Phenomenal. It's so good.
It mixes everything perfectly. Oh my god. And it's, and also just like the variety of styles of songs. It's like that one, like they're so different. That one is so fun. I guess they technically recycled Kyle's Mom's a Bitch from the show. I'm pretty sure that was in the show first.
It was, but
yeah,
not to that scale.
Right, not to that scale. True. Yeah. Yeah, like they get pretty wild with it. Oh man. It's interesting. I forget how kind of hardcore and detestable Sheila is in this movie. I remember watching season 20 of South Park, which is probably the most disliked season of the show. It was the season that they went full serialization. It was also the season where Donald Trump became president, and that messed up their plan because they did not expect that to happen. And so a lot of the second half of the season gets really messed up. But in that season, Gerald Broflovsky is like a detestable person. He's like online trolling all these people and like just being a horrendous human being. And I remember watching that and being like, wow, how could he come back from this? Like, how could I ever look at this character the same way again? And then I went and rewatched the movie and I was like, I guess I forgot about how detestable Sheila was in this. She literally murders Terrence and Philip because she is the one who literally pulls the trigger to kill Terrence and Philip. And it's funny kind of how at the end they're just like, well, everything's fine. Everything's okay. And I guess granted, you know, Kenny saves the day and the world goes back to normal, but it's like I forgot that it was literally her, and it was like, oh, she murdered these people and caused the hell to rise up on earth because of it, which is pretty wild. Yeah.
The way the dilemma escalates in this movie is insane.
It is, because it's just kids go to see a movie. The movie has swears. They start saying all the swears. All the rest of the kids start saying all the swears. Parents get mad at it. They try to fix it, fail. Kids go to see the movie again, start swearing again. And then they blame all of Canada, for that movie.
They pretty much blamed all of Canada because Kenny died.
That's right. Cause Kenny dies. That's right. Cause Kenny dies. Kenny lights his fart on fire because he saw it in the movie, and then they blame Canada. And then Canada bombs the Baldwins to retaliate. they bomb the Baldwins.
All the Baldwins are dead.
It's just so funny because, like, I mean, even back then, like, who, like, people cared about Alec Baldwin, but like, no one cares about the other Baldwin. Sorry, Stephen, and whatever the other one is named. Nobody cares. Do you know? Do you know their name?
No, I don't.
That's right, you don't. Comment below. What's the other Baldwin?
Comment Baldwins. Yeah, we should just call this episode his name, the one we left out.
Yeah. With apologies to Daniel Baldwin.
With apologies.
Oh man,
that's pretty great.
But that is so funny. I'll always laugh at that Bill Clinton delivery. Canada has bombed the Baldwins. It's just so funny. They declare war on Canada over this. It's a wild movie, and then everyone gets drafted. And it's a literal war.
It happens so fast. Like,
yeah.
And the V-chip stuff going on over here. Like,
Ike has to hide in the attic to stay away from, like, so he doesn't get rounded up. It's dark, man. It gets dark. And then obviously all the stuff with Satan. Like, Satan has this great arc where he's just like, I am down in hell because that's my place in the world. This is what I'm supposed to be. But I want to go up there. I want to be somewhere else where I can do new things. I can try out new things. I don't, you know, I because of my beliefs, I'm forced to be down here. Right. And I think that's such a fucking funny and smart angle to make Satan your main character. Like, we should make him empathetic because he didn't choose to be there. he wants to have a life on the surface. And on top of that, you got the real villain, Saddam Hussein.
Which is it's a very funny sentence.
Yeah, it really is. Also some like wild guest stars in this movie. George Clooney is the doctor, which is hilarious. Right.
Yeah.
A doctor we've seen in the show before, but like, you know, at this point in his career, he's pretty much just off of ER, I want to say, or maybe still on ER. So he'd been playing a doctor on television. Like, that was his thing. That's what he was known for. So like, well, let's get George Clooney in the South Park movie to play a doctor. Weirdly, they had Brent Spiner do the voice of Conan O'Brien, even though I know they could have asked Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, I think we talked about this. Yeah, they really could have just called Conan. He would have been cool with the joke they did and everything.
Maybe because they had him kill himself. Maybe.
I think he would have laughed at that.
I think he would have too. But Brent Spiner is like, he played Data on Star Trek The Next Generation. Like, very random guest star to play another celebrity. Strange. And then like the craziest one is they had Mike Judge do the voice of Kenny.
Yeah.
Of Kenny McCormick. Which is a really sweet moment when the whole movie, Kenny is just the sweetest. Kenny is one of my favorite characters in the show. I think he's an underrated character, especially when they eventually revealed that he's Mysterion and you learn that he experiences all of his deaths. It completely recontextualizes his entire existence. But this movie, he's one of the gang. He lights his farts on fire. He dies and he goes to hell. And the whole time he's in hell, he's basically just like trying to help Satan and give him advice. He's like, dude, you should stand up for yourself.
Why don't you just leave him?
Yeah, you should leave him. Exactly. He's like, he's giving him real advice. And then at the end of the movie, he finally gets through to Satan. Satan throws Saddam into the pit. He dies. And he's just like, thank you. Like, you believed in me. You gave me the strength to do this. I'll give you one wish. I'll let you do like whatever you want. And then Kenny sacrifices himself in order to make the world go back to how it was before hell came to earth. It's just what a good little kid. Love Kenny.
Right.
But that's so wild. They just had Mike Judge come in and just do the voice of Kenny for one line. I think he says, goodbye, you guys.
Goodbye, you guys. Yeah. That's it.
Um, Mike Judge, obviously. I assume if you're listening to this podcast, you know who Mike Judge is. Creator of Beavis and Butthead and King of the Hill. And The Good Family, you know, his masterpiece that we will talk about,
can't
I promise.
Forget. I can't wait. Remember when we found out? Remember when we found out that that kid was South African?
I know. We were looking at the the list of characters, and it was like David Herman plays Ubuntu. Uh-oh.
I was like, wait, I don't remember this.
I know. I had to look it up. Yeah, because the thing is that they're like your typical liberal family, and they wanted to adopt a black kid from Africa and got a white kid from South Africa. Which is pretty funny. Conceptually pretty funny. Yeah.
It was really good.
Oh man. Anyways, we'll get to The Good Family, we promise. It's gonna be a great time. I'm very excited.
I can't wait.
I can't either. Yeah, you know, they had a lot of voices in here, but those were the main guest voices. Obviously, it's funny to look through. It's like, oh yeah, Matt Stone plays Saddam Hussein and Butters and Big Gay Al. You know, it's like, oh yeah, Trey Parker plays Stan and Eric and Satan and Bill Clinton. It's just funny to look at all their
lineup.
Yeah. I'm sure that their list of characters they've played over the course of South Park is the most absurd list of variety of people of all time. Yeah. Man.
Who does Kanye? Do you know who does Kanye?
No, let's look it
That's
up.
That's a good impression.
It's so funny. It's such a funny Kanye. Yeah. Kanye West South Park is voiced by Trey Parker. Voiced by Trey Parker. <That's
good>. Oh, so he plays Satan and Kanye West.
it's so funny. I'm looking at the Kanye West South Park Wikipedia page, and then it also says like relatives, mother, and wife, and stepmother-in-law. So it says like the characters who I think have been on South Park before.
Okay.
are listed in here. So it's like wife Kim Kardashian West, and then you click it and you go to the Kardashians page. But the funniest thing is like stepmother-in-law is Caitlyn Jenner, because Caitlyn Jenner has been on the show before. So they just like,
right,
yeah, it's only the characters who I just learned it's Caitlyn Jenner is 71 years old. That's wild. I had no idea.
I learned that a couple days ago.
Wow, yeah. we're all learning. Yeah. We're all learning stuff about Caitlyn Jenner this week, apparently.
Right.
What else is there to talk about with this movie? The music is incredible. Mm-hmm. The storyline is so smart by making the vulgarity the focus. Right. And the conflict. It's the focus and the conflict of the movie is the vulgarity, mm-hmm. which the movie embraces, obviously, to great effect. Yeah. Do you have any other like favorite moments, favorite parts of the South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut?
I love like the stuff with Chef and Stan, which is like, again, when you watch this when you're 12,
I did not
11,
get it. I did not know.
Yeah,
happening.
it's like okay, whatever. This is what they're doing, but like seeing this now, like. As 23, where he's like, Chef, how do you get a girl to like you? And then he just absentmindedly says, oh, you just gotta find a clitoris. He's like, what? What does that mean? And it's like,
so
oh, damn.
Funny. He's like, oh, no, it's easy, Stan. Yeah. You gotta find the clitoris.
So then, absentminded. He's like still working while he does it.
And the rest of the movie, Stan's mm-hmm. just like, where's the clitoris? He's just asking people, where's the clitoris? Where do you find the clitoris?
They like give it to him at the end. Like he has that moment where he finds it.
But even with the visualization, like as a kid, I was like, I don't know what I'm looking at.
I thought it was ice cream.
I don't know
cream,
what this is.
Fam.
Yeah, like, it looks like
yeah, like I thought it was strawberry ice cream.
Granted, it's because they made it giant, you know what I mean? Yeah, so like it's right. like the scale throws you off a little bit, but even as a kid, if it weren't at that scale, I would have been like, I still don't know what's happening. I was 12. Yeah. So man, I really do like, so yeah, La Resistance, that you said is your favorite song. I really love, what's the character? What's his name? What's the kid's name? Gregory.
Oh, Gregory. Yeah, Gregory.
I went to Yardale and heard a 4.0 grade point.
Grade point. Oh, wait. Cartman says a really bad line after that.
Oh, I know. There are, like, it's funny. It's not funny, but it's like, it's so interesting to go back and all these early South Park uses that slur so much more often. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like it's very weird to hear it, you know, today. But it is interesting because, you know, back then, when these were being made, that's how kids talk. They said that word constantly. That was just like what kids were doing. So, you know, as an adult, you listen to it and you're like, holy shit. but, you know, it's just like, it's weird. They talk about that a lot. They talk about how South Park, they've made it for so many years. And whenever each episode is made, it's very much was a reflection of them at that time. And they have changed. They've changed a lot over those years. They've changed their beliefs. They've changed their views. They've changed how they do the show. They've changed the words they say when they do the show. And
that stuff is a real good example of that.
Exactly. And they talk about how they don't want to go back and just pretend that they weren't, that this wasn't the case. You know what I mean? They don't want to go back and like censor what they did and said back then. They just want you to go into it with the mindset that like this is not how we feel now. This is 25 years old. You know what I mean? Like this is not a thing we would do anymore. But yeah, that's exactly right. That Al Gore thing, which granted, the Man Bear Pig episode is genuinely one of my favorite episodes of the show. It's so funny. but the fact that they made this episode basically implying that Al Gore's fight against climate change was actually fighting this imaginary monster that doesn't exist.
Right.
And then only for them to 10 years later be like, well, we were really off base about this. So surprise, Man Bear Pig is real. And it's fucking up everybody, which is such a smart way to say, oh, we were wrong. it's such a good, smart way to do that. And then also that episode had a lot of really fun, great new commentary on the subject. And then also, like, there's a great clip of Al Gore talking about it where he's just like, I thought it took a lot of courage and was really great of them to go back and admit like that they were wrong and to change their mind publicly about this on
That's
their
so
show.
Nice.
It's so cool. I love it. I'm going to make a video about that. I'm making a video about that for my channel for sure.
Oh, that's rad.
I'm going to call it With Apologies to Al Gore.
I love that.
It's going to be great.
Man, it kind of reminds me of, you ever hear about that that back and forth the Simpsons writers had with George Bush's wife?
Barbara Bush?
Yeah. With like, because I think George Bush said, once he said that, like, he,
oh, I think I did he, hear about this.
He wanted the American family to be more like the Waltons and not like the Simpsons.
Right.
And then,
did they write a letter in, as Marge Simpson?
As Marge, yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, because Barbara says something about how she said that the Simpsons was the stupidest thing she'd ever seen or something like that. And then that's what provoked them to like write this like cute little letter, from Marge to her, and then she wrote one back, just kind of thanking Marge, and it's like, oh Marge, I didn't know you had that in you. It's a great story. I love it. And
it's so funny though.
You can probably find a clip on YouTube.
Yeah, I gotta look into that. Y'all should look into that too, because that's a really good story. Yeah, but that's so funny, and like I feel like that's something you can talk about with the Simpsons and South Park, is like the so much of the cultural reaction to it from like especially older generations was kind of this fear and confusion of like what is this, this is dumb, I don't get it, but like the Simpsons has so much heart, like the Sim, especially
Absolutely.
Early Simpsons, it's there's especially, so much yes. there's so much heart in that show, and there's so many like great lessons and just great, it's a relatable great sitcom. It's not just like a dumb family animated family. It's got stuff to say. And I, you know, my mom didn't get it as a kid. My mom thought it was stupid and thought I shouldn't watch it. And I'm like so grateful that I just fought against that to the point where I'm like, no, I'm going to watch The Simpsons. It's my favorite thing. Because I think I'm, I feel like I have such a better, I don't know. I feel like it made me a more well-rounded person, like watching
absolutely
that show.
I could say that about myself. Yeah.
And you know, and I know this to an extent, obviously South Park's different because South Park is so made to offend. Like they are just,
right.
They're just, it's made that way. But I think while some people could watch South Park and take away just, oh, the offensive stuff is what I like. And that is, and then like envelop themselves in that, which is maybe not a great reaction. There are also still good, well-rounded morals in South Park. They do a lot of stuff early on. They have an episode in like season one that the big gay Al episode that is very much a pro gay storyline in the 90s. That was before The Simpsons did it, you know, maybe around the same time The Simpsons did it. Cause they had that, which that episode, I don't think that episode actually holds up as well as I want it.
You're talking about Homer's Phobia?
Yeah, Homer's Phobia.
It's a great episode title, though.
It is a perfect episode title. It's such a good episode title. But the funny thing about that season one South Park episode is that, like, the whole climax of that episode is, like, the whole thing is Stan is upset that his dog is gay. And he's like, I don't want you to be gay. And then he goes and meets Big Gay Al, and Al's like, there is no reason to have a problem with that. Like, look, right. Like, yeah, you know, it's like, it's okay. It's fine. And it's like, the whole message is very much like pro live your life, love your love, you know, be yourself. Mm. And then, you know, the punchline of the episode is that when Stan comes out and showcases those beliefs, the town gets mad, which is also very much a representation of how society was at the time. But I don't think I would watch that episode and come away with the message that the show is anti-gay. I would think the show is actually very much saying the opposite, you know, which is interesting. You know, it's like, I think there's a lot of representation in South Park that has very much missed the mark over the years. They've done a lot of harmful and problematic things over the course of the show.
Right. Yeah.
But I also think that in a lot of other ways, they've done things better than a lot of mainstream media because they're not, I don't know, they have a freedom that mainstream media doesn't with this show. They can do whatever they want and say whatever they feel, and for better or worse, you know what I mean? And I think the show, there's a really great video I would recommend everyone check out. It's by a great YouTube channel called Pridebrary. It's a YouTube channel that does LGBTQ analysis in media. And it's called South Park versus Mainstream Media on LGBTQ, something like that.
Oh, I think I saw that in my recommended.
It's a really, really good video that both points out how South Park more effectively handles LGBTQ storylines than a lot of other mainstream media, while also fully acknowledging its shortcomings. It doesn't just like give it a free pass for some of the more problematic representations that the show has had, and it calls it out for that, which is, I think, obviously important. But it also showcases how like they give better representation for a lot of these LGBT couples than you know mainstream films are able to, because of a lot of, you know, politics involved with movie studios and putting movies in China and like MPAA bullshit. There's all of these factors that South Park just doesn't have to deal with. And it's like, I mean, it's cool, but it's also mostly like a bummer that why can't mainstream media just fucking get it right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. We're not in the exact same spot, but it's still rough.
Right.
Yeah.
It's also funny that like this movie features Satan in a homosexual relationship, but it's never, the punchline is never,
it's played straight. Gay.
It's played completely, it's played for straight. Lack of a better term.
Oh, wow. I'm sorry. I didn't do that on purpose.
I know you didn't.
I think they can see how serious my face was when I said that.
Well, but the listeners at home might not. The people who are listening.
So get off Spotify.
No, we need the Spotify. I want to hit the Spotify charts again. Stay on Spotify.
Okay, stay on Spotify.
No, but it is funny. Like they... It's never the punchline. It's never like, it's like, ha ha, Satan's gay. It's like, it is very much played like an emotional, like important aspect of, you know, a relationship. It's just a relationship drama. It's not, the punchline isn't the homosexuality. It's just played like it's a relationship with drama. Absolutely. That needs fixing. And that's cool. They did that in 1999. You know what I mean? Like, that's, it's cool. You know, granted, you can read into the fact that it was Satan himself, but like, you know, it, in the context of South Park, Satan's kind of a good dude. So
yeah.
He's actually a pretty great dude. I did a video on that. You should check it out.
It's a good video.
Thank you. Thank you, Tariq.
You're welcome.
Toonrific Tariq, seal of approval.
Bless up.
Yeah, man. This movie does so many interesting things. And in a time where they weren't doing things quite like this, you know, and mm-hmm. granted, South Park, no one quite does things like South Park, but I kind of love that the show created this like weird cultural backlash at the time where it was like, people were like, this is the work of Satan, you know, like this is corrupting our youth. It's terrible.
Right.
And it kind of just gave it this like punk rock vibe. Like this show very much has this punk rock. Like, we're going to make this ourself in our basement and we're going to say what we want. And like, who cares? Fuck you, Dad. I'm going to watch my South Park, you know? it's cool. Like, you know, and obviously like I said before, I don't want to give the show a pass for the places it falls short, because if we ever do cover the show, there's going to be a lot of big discussions to have.
It's a lot of long conversations.
Exactly. Which is why
those might be 4-hour episodes.
Yeah. We might have to put that one off for a while, because that's going to be just going to be a lot to unpack because of the time it was made and the goals of the show to offend so blatantly, you know what I mean? And so like, there's going to be a lot to talk about in those regards, in addition to what the stories are telling.
What I like about the show too, is that like, and I think we talked about this before, just in thinking about like the direction the show went later on. But like, the thing I really appreciate about it is that like, not only is it like really smart, but they still have fun. Like, they still do stories about the boys playing a video game, or
right,
you know, just kind of like, just like, just them doing stuff kind of thing. Or like them wrestling, like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's still episode. Like, that episode's hilarious. But yeah, they still allow themselves to have fun with these characters, and like,
and they're not afraid to evolve the show. Like, obviously now it's like on this Tegrity Farms thing, and I know a lot of people don't care for it, but I'm like, if they want to just make what makes them laugh, and like, they, you know, they've been doing the show for 25 years. If they want to just do something that's not just the status quo and they want to change it up, then like, just let them do their thing. They can, you know what I mean? It's they're having
it's
fun.
It's better to
it.
Do that, because that's what they want to do. Otherwise, if they keep doing what everybody expects of them, it will deteriorate.
Right. Exactly. You know, some people would argue that it has, but I've been hearing that argument for over 10 years. So, you know, it's just, you hear it about everything. It's like, I feel like the whole time I've been a South Park fan, I hear people be like, oh, it sucks now. And I'm like, oh, when did it start to suck? This season. It's always a different season.
I feel like I might have talked about this one here before, but it's been really consistent that for The Simpsons, it's like, you know, 1 to 9, maybe 1 to 8, or 1 to 10, maybe, or something. It's just still that specific.
It's in that range. Yeah.
It's common for The Simpsons. But like, I remember sometime I'll go and look at a clip from season 15 or something like that, and somebody will comment like, back when the show was good. It's like, well, this is when nobody cared.
Yeah, this is when people first started saying the show is bad.
Right.
it is funny how, like, I mean, that's just the nature of media and history, though. Like, I think the craziest example of this, and I mean, this is maybe something you don't relate to, because I know we've talked about this before, you're not a Star Wars guy, but I grew up When I was 9 years old, I went to see The Phantom Menace in the theater. I loved it as a kid. The Star Wars prequels were very much panned by fans and critics alike.
Yeah.
When they came out, not a single one of them was well received. Not any of them. People did not like those movies. And now it has been 20 years since they've all come out. It's been almost 20 years since the third one came out. And they have these diehard fans who just absolutely adore those movies because they grew up on them. And, you know, I think we're going to see that with a show like The Simpsons and South Park, because those are such long enduring things. And you're going to keep seeing with Star Wars as well. You got all these kids who love the prequels and say that the sequels are bad. And then in 10 years, we're going to have new movies. And the kids who grew up on the sequels are going to come out of the woodwork and be like, the sequels were the best. These new movies suck. And it's just going to be that cycle. And also the fan base of Star Wars will never be healed because of it, because they are just an obscenely divided fan base that as much as I love Star Wars, I just don't like to engage anymore.
It's probably better for your health.
It's so much better for my health. It's so much better. I just talk to the people who are my friends about Star Wars. I'm like, let's talk about Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because we know what we like about Star Wars. Right. We don't need to argue with other people about what they like about Star Wars.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, it's a little harder. It's weird with The Simpsons because there's this original era in which they were rotating out these showrunners for so long. And then people consider the Mike Scully era when it started going downhill. I have a lot of nostalgia and love for some of the Mike Scully era, and then Al Jean for 15 years, which is wild. Like it's just Al Jean running the show. No disrespect to Al Jean. I love Al Jean. Seasons 3 and 4 I think are incredible. Like some of my favorites, and he co-showrun those. And you know, it's hard to make a show for that long. It's impressive that he's been able to do it.
It just kind of seemed like, and I would pick up on this like kind of as like a teenager and a kid, and watching interviews, but as a teenager, just like seeing stuff online, you read like interviews and stuff. Like it kind of seems like Al Jean is the only one that still cares about it. Like, that cared about it enough to keep running.
It's interesting. I feel like, you know, it feels like they should have just stayed the course of like every few years, rotate showrunners, but you know, maybe people didn't want to, maybe it was just, he was like, well, if we want the show to keep going, I got to do it. You know?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Cause you watch like interviews and stuff like that, and they always get him now. Like you rarely hear from Matt. Like,
oh yeah, I mean, I feel like, I feel like I haven't heard from Matt about the show in 20 years.
Right. Because <You know? laughs> I mean, like, what else can he say about it? You know, is he just gonna tell the story about taking his name off because the critics showed up? Like,
right. I also. You know, when he started doing Futurama, he was very much more involved in Futurama than The Simpsons when that started up. And I think he's similarly involved in Disenchantment now. You know, maybe he's not writing episodes, but I think he's sitting in with the writers and he's pitching ideas and he's like a part of the process, you know? So, he moves on to other projects while The Simpsons continues, but, yeah, it's interesting. But the crazy thing to bring it back to South Park is that it's just been these two guys. It's just been these two guys for 24 years. They've done 23 seasons, 2 specials, a movie, 2 huge video games. and that's just the South Park stuff that they've done. You know, like they've done obviously a couple other movies. They've done a Tony, multiple Tony winning musical, Book of Mormon. They are just like, they are, if I'm not mistaken, I think they're actually just an Oscar away from an EGOT. I don't know if that's true or not. Trey Parker. Does Trey Parker have a Grammy? That's the question. Yes, for Book of Mormon.
Oh, wow.
So they've won a lot of Emmys. They've won a Grammy. They've won a bunch of Tonys, and they've been nominated for an Oscar.
Jeez.
And I bet they'll get nominated for an Oscar again.
I think what's cool to think about when you think about the scope of them doing like all of this stuff, like, you know, like the play and the show and everything like that. Their schedules have to be easy to work around, right? They just kind of block out a couple months.
Exactly.
To go do the show.
They have so much
of their year left.
They really figured it out. Like they mm-hmm. basically, I mean, now it's a little different with the pandemic. They were kind of doing these specials, which took a little longer, but like they basically, I think their process is that before they start, like a month before they start a season of South Park, they go on a retreat with the writers. It's Matt, Trey, and all of the writing staff. They go somewhere to a hotel. They hole up. They talk about the last year, and they throw out story ideas, and they just kind of write them down and just hang out and shoot the shit and pitch ideas. They don't do any writing. They just pitch. Then they go in to the writer's room probably a couple weeks before the first episode. I don't think they go in just 1 week in, and then they mm-hmm. kind of break out what they want to do for the season based on that stuff and start writing. And then they just week, every week.
It's nuts.
Episode. They usually take like 2 weeks off. Like they'll take 1 week off every 3 weeks or so in the middle of a 10 episode season.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give themselves a little buffer. But like they basically spend 12 to 15 weeks to make 10 episodes of their show. Right. So you got about 3 to 4 months, and the rest of their year they do
totally free.
Whatever. Totally free. Maybe they just hang out with their family. Maybe they're writing another musical. Maybe they're figuring out their next movie. I don't know. They sounds like they really figured it out. They really got it made.
It's nuts. I'm jealous. That's pretty
good. Have you played the South Park games?
Mm-mm, I haven't.
You should play the South Park games. I never beat the second one. I need to beat it. I was just bad at the battle system in the second one. But you should play them. They are so funny, so fun. And it literally is just like, oh, I am in South Park. You get to create your character. Cool. You are the new kid in town, and you get to walk around all of South Park and explore. It's crazy. You get to pick up loot from everywhere you go, and it's all inside jokes and references to the show. It's great. It's top notch. Highly recommend the South Park games. Well, what else you got anything else to say about the South Park movie? It's such a fun, funny movie. The music is so great.
I said it earlier, but I'll reiterate that it is gorgeous. as one thing I'll never leave out when just describing it.
Yeah.
Like it's, I love the way that it looks. I love the way that it sounds. It's really gigantic. You would think that it would be difficult to take a show like that and create such a grand scope and give them such these like insanely high stakes, and for it to work
right
and everything to pay off as good as it did, like it really is. It's dope. I love it.
It's funny because even now, like they switch to Maya and they can do a lot more things animation wise now, and they do crazier, bigger things. They use more wild CG effects. They just like they do crazier things now. Yeah. But this one still feels, the movie still feels more cinematic than any episode of the show.
Yeah, man. Like, even like, I don't know, like Imagination Land or something like that.
Yes.
It feels even bigger than that somehow. I don't know exactly how.
You could basically string the Imagination Land trilogy together and call it a South Park movie.
Right.
And conceptually, that is grand. That is wild, really cool. But it doesn't feel as big as the South Park movie. And, you know, I guess that's maybe just the attention to detail they were able to put into the film because it's, you know, a little bit longer time to produce. You have a little bit more time to produce it.
I will say that this is something I've thought about for years. And it kind of makes sense when you're kind of doing the same thing and, you know, technology and time. But, like, it's, at a certain point, it got to a point where, like, I felt like South Park's animation got too detailed.
Right.
There's, like, that, like, sometimes they'll add, like multiple hue shading, like, and everything like that. And I don't know. It would always stick out to me, like, every time they would do it. And that's not to say that it doesn't look great and that it's not impressive or anything like that. But it was, it's such a, I'm only bringing it up because it's such a contrast to this movie where everything is simplified. It's so right. simple that it somehow feels big.
Yeah,
there might be a little bit of, I don't want to call it overcompensating, like in the newer stuff, but like it is, like, in comparison to this film, it is like, this film is very, very simple. It's very flat laid out. It looks like you could just hover over a table and look at it displayed like on the table.
Yeah, I feel like the show, it needed some time to grow into some of the, like, more complicated stuff it started to do. Like, right. when they started throwing those crazy effects in, it was like, oh, this feels weird and different and not like South Park. And I feel like they've, as the time has gone on, they've done a really good job kind of honing in on how to blend that stuff with and make it still feel like South Park. Yeah. But there's definitely a lot of points over the show where it's like, oh, this is not very South Park-y.
This is a lot.
I love the Coon and Friends trilogy, but like Cthulhu's big 3D model comes to mind. Right. Like, oh. Yeah. And, you know, same with like in 200 and 201 when they redid Mecha Streisand and it was like the big CG Mecha Streisand. Mm. But the movie, yeah, it doesn't try to do anything big like that. It tries to take the simple stuff and make it more cinematic rather than making the stuff less simple. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and so, exactly.
Yeah. And so, like, I love how in the South Park movie it zooms in and you can just see what looks like the texture of a paper. You know what I mean? Like, it looks like mm-hmm. it looks like construction paper texture on the characters and on the backgrounds and everything. And when that's in high def on a big screen, it's just like, you can see it.
Makes
you know
me
what I mean?
Get
it's like
Blu-ray.
Dude, get the Blu-ray. It's worth it. It's great.
Yeah, it makes me want to.
It makes me want to go find a screening of it and go see it in a theater.
I would fucking love to see this in a theater. Yeah. Like that would make my day.
We got to figure that out. We'll figure it out. We'll
maybe
rent
we
the
could
theater.
Just we rent the theater and we find actual prints of the film so we can watch it.
That would be so cool. Find an actual print. Man, there's some theaters here in LA that do 35 millimeter screenings and like, oh man, if one of them did the South Park movie, I'd buy a bunch of tickets. I would buy a ticket and I would fly you out, Tariq.
I would come buy a plane ticket with me.
Oh man.
I would be there.
Wow. Great movie. Really just incredible nostalgia for this film. My Absolutely. First experience watching it was great. And I don't know. It's just, this is like a big part of my childhood, this movie. It's hard to describe how I can't remember a happier feeling than the first time I watched this movie. Like, I can't remember many happier feelings than that. There's just so much going into that weird experience that made me like just adore everything about this film. And every time I revisit it, I'm like I rewatched it with you a few weeks ago, obviously. And then I sat down to watch just the Satan parts for my Satan video. And I literally turned it on and it was like, oh, I'm just going to watch the whole movie again. And it had been 1 week since I had watched it with you. And that was how I was like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to watch this whole movie. It's only an hour and a half. This is perfect. I'm just going to watch the whole thing.
To be fair, I probably would have done the exact same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have much else. It's a great movie. I'm I'm, you know, talking about it has got me kind of interested and eager and like thinking about what it will be like when we talk about South Park on the pod at some point.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You got any last thoughts on the South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut?
Talking about it made me want to see it again for some reason.
I know. I'm feeling the same way. I have a lot of work to do tonight, but a part of me is like, I should just get in bed and watch the South Park movie. It's like a comforting, it's like, I mean, it's partially it's so nostalgic, but it's comforting. Like, it's just,
it is really comforting.
Yeah. Well, if you have, obviously we said this earlier, but we're not going to quite jump back into Archer yet, but we are going to jump back into Archer. I promise. I just need a little more free time right now. My new job, I'm working on this production and it's just taken up a lot of my life. So we're going to keep doing movies for at least one more week, maybe two more weeks. But I think we have confirmed that next week we're going to talk about the Simpsons movie.
Absolutely.
Which I'm excited about. I can't wait either. I haven't watched it in a long time.
I watched
obviously,
it maybe 2 weeks ago.
I saw you log it. I saw you log it in Letterboxd. I'm really excited to watch it and talk about it because this will be the first. I mean, obviously, we talk about The Simpsons almost every episode of the show we record because it's impossible to talk about adult animation without at some point going back to The Simpsons because that is kind of what created modern adult animation. But it'll be the first Simpsons that we talk about on the pod. And, you know, I think it's going to be interesting. I'll very similarly be thinking, I want to start talking about The Simpsons on the podcast. We have so much to talk about over the course of the podcast. But
there are a lot of pretzels that curse.
Exactly. I'm just going to lay out the schedule for y'all, though. The plan is to do that next week. We might do one more week of a movie. We might. Depends on how busy we are. Or we might jump back into Archer. And we're honestly, I think the plan is just to go straight through Archer.
Right,
I think we're just going to go. I know we've been taking breaks for shows for miniseries. We only did the first four seasons of Futurama, but we're just going to power through all 11 seasons of Archer. We're going to talk about all of it. Maybe after a certain season, we'll take a break like in the middle and do another movie or something if we're feeling like, oh, this is too much Archer. But the plan is just to like, you know what? We've been doing this podcast we've done like 10 plus episodes now. We can just power through a whole series and then who knows what we'll do after that. We do need to get back into Futurama. I do want to talk about the Futurama movies really badly. We have some cool guests planned and we've already recorded our Bender's Big Score episode.
The longer we wait into Futurama, the funnier the way we do that episode is, because I think we keep saying stuff like, we don't know when this is coming out.
Yeah, exactly.
We just finished Futurama.
It's going to come out next year. No, we'll see. It's going to be funny, though. I think that's a good episode. We were so eager to talk about Bender's Big Score. We just jumped right into it.
Right.
But we got to talk. We'll probably do a month that is Bender's Big Score, Beast with a Billion Backs, Bender's Game, and Into the Wild Green Yonder, all individually.
Right. That's the only reason we haven't use that, because we could have just threw that in one of the like weeks that we were gone, but
exactly I wanted to
do those would be better if they were all together, all of the Futurama.
Agreed, so it'll be fun. And then, you know, obviously, as always, comment what you want us to talk about. We obviously already have 100 million things we want to talk about on this podcast. It's a lot. And then, you know, we're also like, by the time that's happening, Rick and Morty season 5 will be done. Maybe we'll have to talk. We might have to talk about that too. Maybe we'll end up taking a break in the middle of Archer to cover Rick and Morty season 5. So like, I don't know. There's a lot. We haven't even gotten to some of our favorite shows yet. Tariq has only been able to talk about Family Guy by bringing it up, not specifically because we want to talk about it.
Let the record be known that you were the first person to say Family Guy this episode. I didn't do it this time.
You're not wrong.
I'm getting better. My new fascination is
Cleveland Show.
Smart Guy. No, or not Cleveland Guy. Show.
You were talking about Cleveland Show the other day, and I do want to cover Cleveland Show. But maybe we should cover Smart Guy. Smart Guy is
I would love to talk about Smart Guy, man.
Well, maybe this is where we should wrap up our episode. All right. This is a nice one. A little tighter than usual because we're just talking about a movie, but you should expect that for these movie episodes. We're not always going to talk for 3 hours, guys.
Yeah.
All right.
We're not going to give you the duration of the movie about
Well, we almost did here. The movie's an hour and a half.
We almost did, but we didn't.
We didn't. But we're going to sing for 10 more minutes so that we do. No, I'm just kidding. with that, all right, I guess I'll just do the sign-off stuff. Thank you to Michael Younes for producing and editing this podcast. Thank you to Carrie Feek for our artwork. Thank you for Jake Neutron for our theme song.
There we go.
Thank you to Toonrific Tariq for talking about South Park with me today. Thank you to you, the audience, for listening every week that we put out an episode and not complaining very much when we miss a week. We appreciate you.
And thank you to Johnny Two Cellos for being rad.
Thanks, Tariq. And with that, we'll fucking see you later. You fucking.
Yeah. Come on now.
We love you.
Come in, Brian Dennehy.